This podcast of The Exchange is sponsored by
Doucette Survey, serving your professional land surveying and mapping needs in New England, now with offices in New Hampshire and Maine. Information at doucetsurvey.com. That's doucetsurvey.com.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, equal housing opportunity.
And Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org. Enjoy the show.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. SB 113 is this year's Senate bill to add casinos to New Hampshire's gambling options. It proposes two facilities, one large so-called destination casino resort that backers say would come with an $80 million license fee, and another smaller facility with a promised $40 million. Like previous gambling bills, SB 113 passed with bipartisan approval in the Senate and now faces bipartisan skepticism in the House. A recent hearing before the House Ways and Means Committee brought out the usual arguments. Supporters said gambling revenues could help pay for needs from road repair to county nursing homes. Opponents said those promised monies are an unsure bet, pointing to the recent downturn in gambling revenues elsewhere in the Northeast. Today in The Exchange, we return to the betting table to hear how this debate is playing out this year, both in New Hampshire and in the broader New England and Northeast region. Let's hear from you, too. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Would you like to see casino gambling in New Hampshire or not? Let us know. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. With me in studio, Steve Dupree, spokesman for Casino Free New Hampshire and a former Republican Party chair in the state. And Steve, nice to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, Laura.
Also with us, Scott Spradling, president of the Spradling Group, a media relations company that represents Millennium Gaming, which hopes to develop a casino at Rockingham Park in Salem. And Scott, good to see you too.
Hi, Laura.
And also with us from Boston is John Camp, New England reporter for the Wall Street Journal. He's written recently about the casino industry's growth in the Northeast. And John Camp, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for having me.
Well, John, I want to turn to you first. You've written a lot about the growth in casinos in this region, the Northeast and New England. How much has this industry expanded in our region over the past, 10, 15, 20 years, John?
Well, the quick answer is a lot. The casinos are pretty much in every state right now in the region except for New Hampshire and Vermont. So the whole time you guys have been debating this, you've kind of become a holdout in a sense. And I know it seems like Groundhog Day in a sense in New Hampshire, where this issue seems to come up every year. But in the decade or so that you've been debating this, you've seen casinos roll right up to your doorstep almost, where they're going to be added here in Massachusetts, where I work pretty soon. Looking at some stats from compiled by UNLV, between the years 2004 and 2014, the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast combined added 26 new casinos.
Wow, that's a lot.
And yeah, it's a big number. A lot of that, frankly, came from Pennsylvania, which kind of came out of nowhere to become Pennsylvania, essentially, in that time span. And but they've popped up in Maryland. We have some new ones in New York, and more coming. And that last point is very relevant. There's a dozen or so still on the way.
Well, Pennsylvania, is that what you said? I hadn't heard that before, John.
I think I just coined a term.
Yeah, right. And UNLV is University of Nevada, Las Vegas, which studies the gambling industry.
That's right.
Yeah, so why, John? Why this tremendous growth in just what sounds like the last 10, 15 years?
Well, there are a few big reasons for this. Number one is that casinos are appealing to state lawmakers and to governors because it's a source of new revenue that does not require them to raise taxes. And, lawmakers will often sort of hem and haw about this for a while, and you'll see these debates. For example, in Massachusetts, casinos were debated for many years before we passed a law. But you know, there's always sort of puts and takes in terms of, you know, do we want to add this industry? People are concerned about the social aspect of it, but that revenue is very appealing. And then when you add the recession, I think that's a really key ingredient, because then all of a sudden state budgets are taking a hit, employment is taking a hit. And then this source of new jobs and new non-tax revenue becomes ever more appealing.
Although people tend to gamble less in recessions, I would think, John, right?
To some extent. I don't have great numbers on that, but, you know, people like to gamble pretty much all the time, or all year round.
Well, John, another question for you, and then I want to bring our New Hampshire guests in. What about the saturation term, John? Are you hearing people, you know, state officials in the Northeast, or even gambling officials themselves, talking about whether this region is saturated?
That's a really important question, and it's a growing concern right now. And it's a little tough to define exactly what saturation means, but no matter how you look at it, casinos are everywhere in the region right now. And the reason why is because each individual state only cares about what happens within its own borders. You know, Pennsylvania wants revenue from casinos that operate in Pennsylvania. And, you know, it makes sense that Maryland, you know, which is nearby, will look at that and say, well, wait a minute, if all these people from Maryland are going into Pennsylvania to gamble over there, why don't we just keep them at home and have them gamble here? And so we'll pass our own law. And you've seen this kind of domino effect throughout the region, where everybody wants to keep those gamblers at home or try and draw some across the borders so that that revenue flows into their own coffers.
Steve Dupree, how do you see this so-called saturation issue from your vantage point with Casino Free New Hampshire?
Well, I think it's pretty clear we are oversaturated. Let me give you a few facts. Fitch Financial Ratings said that we were oversaturated in New England. Pennsylvania, which jumped in, and I love that term, Pennsylvagus, is seeing their revenue go down. There's been a 30% decline in Delaware since 2011 alone. Foxwoods, one of the originals, said there's a dramatic oversupply. And then Michael Mezka, who is a gaming consultant, he has a company called MMRC, basically said, I think an article I've read maybe in the Wall Street Journal, the casino market was oversaturated. In New Jersey, where they've got special problems because of Atlantic City as sort of a semi-destination, there's been no revenue, no net revenue growth, even though they've added casinos in other places. And just 3 days ago, there was a proposed new casino in southern Maine that Maine legislators are considering. I think when you take that all into consideration, we should sort of fall back to the original study that the Center for Public Policy did, which said if we assume there's one in Massachusetts, which now appears, John can tell us, I guess, in Everett, then any casino in New Hampshire becomes a local slots parlor. We're oversaturated. The revenue won't be there.
Scott, how big a concern is this for your client, Millennium Gaming, this saturation issue?
I think it's an important debate, but we look at it in terms of competition. And I think maybe a fair analogy is something like this. Just because other states have great tourism venues or wonderful restaurants doesn't mean we throw up our hands and don't get involved in the business. The money is absolutely there. And I think actually that John made a good point about the recession dollars and what's going on, but I think it's also important to take a look at that. In 08-09, gross gaming revenues for the entire country dropped like almost 9% during the recession. So you're right. When people don't have money, they're not going to go gamble. But in the years since, from 2010 through most recently 2014, gross gaming revenues nationally increased almost 13%.
Wow.
So the numbers are increasing. In fact, just last year, Maine saw over $1 billion through its two casinos, its two country casinos, gambled. $1 billion wagered in the state of Maine. So I think it's more than clear that the money is there. I think it's exactly why places like Massachusetts are looking at it. And I think it's like John said, I think there's reasons why New Hampshire is looking at it. There is money to be made. And the same Center for Public Policy that Steve just mentioned did a gravity model for New Hampshire and tried to figure out, well, what's a southern New Hampshire casino going to raise? And they came up with $422 million incorporating assuming competition in Massachusetts. There were three studies done in the last couple of years trying to estimate, well, what are we going to do? What are we really going to see in New Hampshire? Can we compete? And they came within 5% of each other. One out of UMass Dartmouth came up with $413 million gross. White Sands, that was hired most recently by the Governor's Commission on Regulatory Gaming, came up with almost $400 million. So there are a lot of experts out there that say that if you build something, they will come. But you've got to build the right thing. You can't do slot barns. You've got to do something that is destination, where there's a good minimum investment, and there's a good reason for people to come visit. And I think that's the plan that we've got for Salem.
Steve, go ahead, and then another question for John.
I would just note that Millennium Gaming puts out a report about gambling trends, and the number one gambling trend for the industry in 2015 are that revenue growth is flat or down as we have more oversaturation. So one of the companies that's in this game, in fact, I think Scott's client, said the largest trend is overall revenue is flat or declining because of oversaturation. Given the fact that there's going to be one, and we'll talk about revenue later, there's not really revenue for the state that works.
Our phone number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter if you'd like. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Today in the exchange, we're looking at the perennial gambling debate here in the Granite State, but looking at it in the wider context of the Northeast and New England, what's happening with this industry around our region. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us. Again, email is exchange at nhpr.org. You know, John, since you're in Boston and the New England reporter for the Wall Street Journal, just remind us what the plan is there in the Bay State for casinos.
Sure. So Massachusetts passed a law in 2011 that allowed for three kind of large resort-style destination casinos and one slots-only facility. And thus far, they've licensed the slots facility, which is slated to open up within a matter of months, actually, in the southeastern part of the state at a racetrack near the Rhode Island border. And then we have two destination, large resort casinos licensed thus far. There's a $1.6 billion facility from Wynn that is slated for Everett, Mass. That's right outside Boston, and that could open in late 2017, maybe into 2018. And then there's an $800 million MGM facility out in Springfield that is also on deck for 2017.
Which the people in Springfield, from what I understand, want, right?
That's right. And here in Massachusetts, the law required that every town or a city where a casino was proposed, they got to hold a referendum and basically decide if they wanted them or not. And Springfield is a town that definitely raised their hand and said, we want this.
Yeah, so $1.6 billion in Everett, $800 million in Springfield, and then another so-called slot barn, like a less expensive, I don't want to say lower end, I don't want to make a value judgment on this, but a smaller, less extensive facility.
Right. It's going to be slots only. It will be built at a harness racing track, and I believe that's in the $200 million range.
So here's a question for you, Scott Spradling. The last time we talked about casinos, and I don't know if that's the case this time, some people said, hey, if you're going to go big, you got to go big because Massachusetts is going big. We can't just build some cheapy thing. I mean, is the plan in New Hampshire that's on the table right now for something big and destination-y?
Yeah, Senate Bill 113 would call for two licenses. One is a larger license that would require a minimum of 2,000 slots and 80 table games. And there's a minimum investment capital required of $375 million.
Theaters, restaurants, does that have to be part of the proposal?
It requires a local referendum vote just like Massachusetts, but you have to put it on the table. Those aren't required, but you essentially have to essentially this is requiring the adults to apply, if you will. It's got to be something nice enough to be a destination, and that's where the revenues can be maximized.
All right. More after a short break. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, once again, the casino issue is before the New Hampshire legislature. We're looking at that this hour and how the arguments heard here fit into the bigger regional picture. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Is it time for New Hampshire to adopt casino gambling like so many other states or not? Let us know what you think. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, the email is exchange at nhpr.org. Steve Dupree is here, spokesman for Casino Free New Hampshire. Scott Spradling, president of the Spradling Group, a media relations company that represents Millennium Gaming. And John Camp is with us for a few more minutes, New England reporter for The Wall Street Journal. He's written about the casino industry's growth in the Northeast. And another question for you, John, just before the break, we were talking about Massachusetts and its plan, which you described for sort of two big destination casinos and one smaller slots parlor. How are other states in the region, John, viewing the impact of Massachusetts going this way?
Well, for the states that already have casinos, it's pretty scary. Massachusetts is where is the most populous state in the region, and casinos in Rhode Island and Connecticut rely on people driving down from Massachusetts to go gamble there. So The response has in some ways been to arm up and see if they can add yet more business to try and keep revenue on their side of the border. In Connecticut, for example, the two tribes behind Foxwoods and Mohegan Sun have been discussing adding possibly three more casinos in the state. And one of the ideas would be, you know, perhaps put one somewhere in the northern part of the state between Hartford and Springfield to try and essentially guard the border and keep people from heading up to go gamble at the casino that's coming to Springfield. In Rhode Island, they've known this has been coming for a long time, and they have a pretty big casino right outside of Providence that is a major source of the or major resource for the state budget, and they're very concerned about the impact of Massachusetts. And as a result of that, we've seen them add table games there. The casino has expanded, and they're now talking about adding a hotel.
Yeah, and speaking of Connecticut, in a few minutes we're going to have a Connecticut reporter who covers the casino industry in that state. What about the revenues, though, John? I mean, you don't have to give us exact dollar figures, but in terms of how much states hope to get, are those hopes generally realized or not?
It's sort of depends on time in a sense. I mean, I think as a newcomer, you're taking business from another state, you're new on the scene, and you do well for a while. And, you know, Pennsylvania is a great example. I mean, I think they had something like $3 billion in overall gaming revenue there in a recent year. And, you know, something like 12 casinos, the industry just exploded there. But it's been about a decade now, and they're starting to slide. And the reason why is because you've got new casinos in Maryland, new casinos in Ohio, and it's putting a little bit of a squeeze. So you may come out of the gate strong, but it doesn't necessarily last forever.
Well, one more question for you, John, then I'll let you go, and then I'll hear from our New Hampshire guests on this revenue stability. How do Wall Street bond rating agencies, John, look at this issue of gambling revenue when they assess a state's overall fiscal soundness? You know, they want states to have a good balance sheet. They want states to have, you know, a little bit of a rainy day fund and so forth. How do they look at a state's reliance on gambling revenue when it comes to that overall fiscal assessment?
You know, I'll pass on that one and see if our other experts can chime in, because I'm just not a pro on the rating agencies.
We should call your colleagues in New York City on that.
That would be great.
Well, John, thank you so much for being with us. We'll talk to you again. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
That's John Camp, New England reporter for The Wall Street Journal, who's written about the casino industry's growth in the Northeast. You can join our conversation, too, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Gentlemen, let's talk about that a little bit, the reliability issue of these revenues. Steve Dupree.
Well, first, I just want to make sure that everybody listening doesn't think the state of New Hampshire would get $400 million. What Scott was referring to were gross revenues. The Lottery Commission assumed that it would be $135 million gross to the state, net of expenses $90 million. That study did not take into account any loss of sales of lottery tickets, did not take into account loss of business profits tax or room and meal tax revenues anywhere else in the state.
The cannibalization.
Cannibalization.
Issue.
And I think the best study was done by Cliff Belo, who said it's really about $50 million. And then
he's an anti-gambling person.
Anti-gambling, correct. And it assumed that we'd have more slot machines in Salem than they would in Everett, which is kind of a big assumption. But setting that aside, I understand from the testimony we heard that rating agencies doing state review of state finances will not include gaming revenues as a bondable, something you can use to float bonds.
Because it's too uncertain,
and there's too much. I mean, imagine an assumption that one would be in Salem, and that's big if, because with one in Everett, it may be in Concord or Manchester, and then there's one right over the border in Kennebunkport. You know, the saturation thing just pulls the revenues so many different ways that nobody will let a state rely on gambling revenues to float bonds.
Can you talk about that too, Scott Spradling,
sure,
please? How much money New Hampshire hopes to get and what steps the bill sponsors have taken to try to ensure that those dollars materialize?
Absolutely. Cliff Belo, who's a longtime opponent and a former state senator, has really drilled down. And I think the philosophy of his reports would be it's always darkest before it gets really, really dark. I think these
Sherman
are way
– Sherman Miles said that.
I think
it's
right. Way overstated, the social impacts. I mean, look – let's back up for 2 seconds. Look at Massachusetts. You said yourself, the Wynn Casino, $1.6 billion overall investment, which would require a great deal of financing. to say the least. Another one in Springfield for $800 million. That is $2.5 billion of investment in a state. Do you think any bank in its right mind would make an investment like that if they didn't think there would be a return on the investment? Do you think that of the 26 new casinos being built, all of which have to be financed at some level, that the people that are making these investments are willing to throw away that kind of money? The answer is no. That's because there is a competitive market. That's because the dollars are there. And that's because, especially here in New England, albeit Massachusetts is about to build casinos, we can compete. There is money here. And I think that argument speaks for itself. And when you talk about the lost revenues, which is a really good point to make, a really important point to make, as Massachusetts opens up, the Center for Public Policy Studies here in New Hampshire estimated $24 million lost in rooms and meals. That's just the tax losses. That's not the business losses. You can multiply that by six, seven, eight times to talk about the business losses. If the casinos open in Massachusetts
and everybody goes there
and we do nothing, $80 million a year is gambled by Granite Staters in New Hampshire every year. That comes out to, I don't know, about $100 a year per adult. That's not a whole lot of money over the course of a year if you start looking at averages. The money is certainly there. But if we do nothing, there is, in fact, a cost of doing nothing. We will see those revenues lost. Cliff Below is right about lost lottery revenues, lost rooms and meals. That can be recaptured if we do something here, and it's a non-tax revenue source. Granite Staters can decide whether or not they want to do it, and towns have to approve it first.
Well, and speaking of the social costs, which have come up so much, Steve Duper, I wanted to ask you kind of the flip side of that. The state is said to face some pretty dire needs, from a very scary growing heroin epidemic that everybody's worried about to red-listed bridges. How do you respond to those, Steve, who say that the state has some serious problems and that there are social costs on the other side if we don't invest in these casinos?
Well, first, just one correction. Your question to Scott was whether the states could rely on the revenue. My answer was you can't bond it. Of course, the casino operators make money. That's the nature of the game. Unfortunately, they take those profits and don't invest them in New Hampshire. They take them to wherever they live, which is outside the state. Look, if the state decides it needs more revenue, there are dozens of ways to attract new revenue. You know, you could reform the business profits tax and the BET tax and lower the rates and get a broader base very easily, and it wouldn't be a sales or income tax. I am amazed at the lack of, you know, gumption of a lot of our legislators to tackle this issue. And gambling is probably the least reliable source of income over the long haul, has the most negative impacts. And the argument that building a casino will give us enough drug money so we could help our gambling addicts and cut crime, nobody ever says, I built a casino to make a better sense of community, ever.
Well, here's an email from Brian. And again, the email address is exchange@nhpr.org. The phone number, 1-800-892-6477. Brian in Antrim says the casino ship has sailed. There are too many casinos in the region and not enough gamblers. He says it's too late for New Hampshire. There's not enough money in it to make it worth wrecking families. Scott, I'll throw that one to you.
Sure.
It gets back to the saturation point that
Absolutely.
We raised earlier.
Multiple studies from different universities like UMass Dartmouth, Center for Public Policy Studies, White Sands National Gaming that came in and looked at this showed that there is, in fact, a large market of people with income growth and interest in doing it. This has public support. A clear majority of people in New Hampshire have repeatedly said they are okay with this for a variety of reasons. Some might have to do with the details of the bill. Some might be interested in not having to drive to Connecticut to do this. And some might say, you know, live free or die. It's our choice. But in terms of the revenue reliability, I don't know if people realize this, but they've been gambling in Maine now at a casino for a decade. For a decade. And one of their favorite arguments is to say, yes, like the shiny new toy, for the first year or so, everything looks great. And then by year five, I believe it's Jim Rubens who has said, what you end up with is an amazing skyrocket in crime. The economy collapses. The casinos threaten, and we start looking like Atlantic City. They've been going for 10 years. Revenues have been at expectations every year for the last 10 years, and we're not hearing any of those problems coming about. And in fact, they're talking, again, about more. But we can compete. That's the point. And I made that point originally, that it's not like we can't get into this business. You have to go in with eyes wide open. You have to know that there are going to be other casinos in other states that are going to try to compete for these dollars. And therefore, you put together a bill that has minimum investment requirements, that has local control, strong regulation, protections for charities so that they can be made whole and they don't lose out.
Because charity gaming is big in New Hampshire.
Absolutely. And you do a product that allows us to compete and be attractive. We're a tourism state. We have people coming every year all the time. And that's a great reason to visit New Hampshire. This is one more reason. We can certainly compete. There's 40 states that are doing casino gambling right now.
Well, that's the question for you, Steve Dupree. And then I want to bring another guest in on the line. This whole, you know, the sky is falling. You'll see crime and families wrecked and so forth. 36 states at least do have casino gambling, and the sky doesn't seem to be falling across the whole country.
I'll start with what I said before. I've never seen a state say we improved our sense of community, our overall well-being, drug addiction went down, prostitution went down. In the casinos themselves, there's very little crime. But if you look at property values, the National Association of Realtors, for example, said property values distinctly go down. Businesses around casinos are cannibalized. And the problem in New Hampshire, and I know the critics, the folks who support it have worked hard on bills, say we're going to minimize the impact. You know, the Capital Center for the Arts can submit an impact study, and but there's no requirement that if there is an impact, and there most certainly will be on all of our entertainment venues around the state, that they really – that the commission does anything to solve the problem. They just have to listen. So the impact will draw room and meals revenue from Manchester and their vibrant community. The other thing to keep in mind, that when you ask people do they publicly support gambling, people go, yeah, hey, I don't care if you gamble. When you say here are the costs and here are the net benefits and they learn more, they go, oof. A couple other points. If we are a live free or die state, we should allow them everywhere. Why should we give a monopoly to anyone? And if we are going to give a monopoly, why don't they guarantee a certain amount of revenue to the state of New Hampshire? None of this talk about percentage. Give us a guarantee. Put up or shut
up. X million.
Put up or shut up. Let's not make it a gamble for the state of New Hampshire.
There's a guarantee, 35%, just like what other states do around the country. You get a guaranteed percentage of whatever ends up being made. And I think that's a smart business. That's how they do it.
Well, gentlemen, I want to bring another voice into our conversation, someone who's been covering the casino industry for a long time in Connecticut, which has at least two large casinos. Brian Hallenbeck is with us, staff writer for The Day of New London, Connecticut. And Brian, welcome to The Exchange. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. Good morning.
Well, how important are the casinos in Connecticut, Brian, in terms of revenues to the state government and the broader state economy?
Well, they're very important. They contribute, as you probably know, 25% of their slot machine revenue is contributed to the state, which at its peak in 2007 amounted to some over $400 million.
Wow.
That has dwindled steadily since then, and with the Massachusetts casinos coming online in 2017, by 2019, that's projected to be that figure that was over $400 million is projected to be under $200 million. So that gives you an idea of how serious the legislator is taking taking that the threat coming from Massachusetts and also from New York.
Yeah, and I definitely want to ask you about that, Brian, in a moment. Just remind us, how many casinos are there in Connecticut? And they're pretty big, right? These are big resorts.
They are. They're just the two. They're both tribally operated casinos. There's Mohegan Sun in Uncasville, and right nearby, within 7 or 8 miles, is Foxwoods Resort Casino in Ledyard, operated by the Mashantucket Tribe.
Wow, so they're right near each other.
They are, within 7 miles. And they are huge. I mean, they are among two of the largest in the Western Hemisphere. At one time, probably hands down, the generating the most revenue of any casinos in the world. That's no longer true, but they are certainly very big.
Well, it's interesting. We've talked a lot about, you know, casinos competing with each other and taking each other's customers and so forth, but here they are right next to each other. They seem to be coexisting.
Yes, and they've done quite well. They've existed as what they've called a duopoly for the better part of a decade, actually 2 decades. Fox was opened in 92. And Mohegan in 96, and as long as they were the only game in town, they both did quite well.
Well, so now everybody's worried about Massachusetts and Connecticut. Give us a little bit more on that, Brian, please. How
sure.
Worried state officials are, how worried casino officials are about the building in Massachusetts.
Sure. Well, the one that poses the most problem potentially is the one that's coming in Springfield that MGM Resorts is building. They've actually broken ground on it now, and they expect that to be up and running by the end of 2017. And then there's Wynn Resorts coming near Boston, and that'll have an effect here as well as the slots parlor in Plainville. And the two tribes have taken the lead in sort of reacting to this, and they've sort of combined and approached the state legislature and said, you know, we're willing, or more than willing, we'd like to operate some smaller casinos around the state to fend off this competition. If that legislation flies, the first one they would pursue would be north of Hartford, probably along the I-91 corridor, you know, south of Springfield, near the Massachusetts line, and some other sites, possibly in southwestern Connecticut or western Connecticut, to defend the border there against what's coming in New York. There are
defend the border. So basically, they're looking at Massachusetts and Connecticut and saying, they being the tribes, and they're saying, Brian, look, we need to build more to, you know, hold on to our own, so to speak. Is that right?
That's right. The bill is currently being kicked around in the legislature, and in fact, there's a committee expected to possibly vote on it today. Would authorize the two tribes to jointly operate up to three satellite casinos, they've been called.
Satellite casinos.
And these would be much smaller facilities than either Mohegan Sun or Foxwood. It would be nothing of that magnitude. But they would have slot machines and table games and maybe some other amenities, something on the order of a $300 million investment.
Well, Brian, hold on a second if you could, please. I just want to bring our New Hampshire guests into this. You know, Scott Spradling, what he's talking about gets to one of the biggest concerns that you hear about casinos, and that's saturation. You know, the bills we've seen in New Hampshire have been for one casino or two casinos, and everybody promises that's it, that's it. But here you see in Connecticut, the tribes going, uh-oh, competition, let's build more. And that's the fear, that once you start, you can't stop.
Understood. And look, competition's a healthy thing. Competition is what drives our economy. And I think this same application can be made here. This is where maybe I can take 2 seconds and boast about my own client. Millennium Gaming has an operation just south of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, almost on the state line with West Virginia, within 30 miles in either direction of competing casinos, and it's called the Meadows. Since they went in and revitalized a horse track park and turned it into a casino and hotel, there's been over $1 billion in investment in Washington County, Pennsylvania. Malls, 8 hotels, new restaurants coming to town. Long and the short of it is this: you get the right operator who understands how to compete in the business and who also understands how to cooperate and work with different communities, then the JFK rising tide raising all boats can absolutely apply. But you have to have the right competitive plan. That is essential. I think that's what they're talking about in Connecticut.
All right, more after a short break. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, we talk with an expert on Cuba, get his thoughts on the warming relations between the United States and Cuba. That's tomorrow on The Exchange. Today, we're talking about another proposal to bring casinos to the Granite State, and we're looking at the arguments here in New Hampshire and how they're being played out in the region, the Northeast and New England. Join us with your questions and comments. Is it time for New Hampshire to join the rest of the Northeast and put some casinos in place to bring revenue to the state? Or not? Do you think that's a good idea that the state should pursue or not? 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Steve Dupree's here, spokesman for Casino Free New Hampshire. Scott Spradling, president of the Spradling Group, a media relations company that represents Millennium Gaming. And joining us from Connecticut is Brian Hallenbeck, staff writer for The Day of New London. His beat includes the casinos of Connecticut. And here's an email, gentlemen, from Lee. And I think I'll throw this to you first, Brian. Lee says, what about the increase in bad side effects, like increases in crime in the casino area, increased police costs, etc.? Lee says, I have had friends lose everything to gambling addiction, and casinos are just another attraction to losing. Life is a gamble to start with, Lee says. We should stop making it easier for people to destroy their lives. What have you learned, Brian, in your time covering the casinos about gambling addiction and some of the other ill effects that we hear about?
Well, you know, it certainly is something that comes with casinos, and it is a big part of the debate, and is a big part of the debate about the expansion of gambling here in Connecticut. A lot of casino opponents frequently point out that the effects of casinos have not been adequately studied. and they need to be studied more frequently than they are. The last full-scale state-funded study of the effect of the casinos here in Connecticut was in 2009 by the Spectrum Gaming, an outfit out of New Jersey. And one of the interesting findings in that, or somewhat unexpected, was that the incidence of embezzlements had skyrocketed in southeastern Connecticut since the opening of the casinos. And traffic and drunken driving problems that local police have to deal with also had increased by quite a bit. More recently, there was a study by a Western Connecticut State University professor out last year, which surprisingly found that the incidence of serious crime over the last 20 years, which we've had the casinos here, has not increased as much as the professor would have anticipated, only by about 9%, compared to the fact that property losses, the value of property losses over that period, where it was up about 40%. So, and then we're really not sure how to explain those figures.
When you say property loss, do you mean bankruptcy, or what do you mean?
No, the value of property damages that occur in theft and robberies and things like that. And part of that may be explained simply by inflation, but that was a striking finding that this professor came across.
What about jobs, Brian? That's also another promise that casinos bring, not just revenue to the state, but just investment in a brand new business. You know, you're hiring people and so forth. What have these casinos meant for the jobs picture in Connecticut?
Absolutely. In fact, it's even something you hear more about than the revenue itself is the job creation, and that's a big part of what the debate is now before the legislature. In addition to the potential for major revenue loss when the Massachusetts casinos come online, it's been projected that by 2019 the Connecticut casinos could lose as much as $700 million in revenue annually. And that translates roughly proportionally into about a third of their workforce. Over the last 7 or 8 years, the casinos have lost a third of their workers.
So they've had to lay people off as casino revenues go down?
Right. Some 8,500 jobs have been lost at the casinos since 2008. And the projection is that they could lose another 6,000 once the Massachusetts casinos are up and running. So
they're worried about that jobs picture.
Very much so.
And are they so-called good jobs, you know, decent pay, benefits, and so forth? Brian, do we know about the quality of those jobs?
Well, they run the gamut. Of course, at the upper end, there's a lot of executive-level jobs that are well-paid, and then many more at the lower end, which I think they're staying at an average wage of $40,000. Now, those are for the full-time jobs, and increasingly over time, what has happened is that more of the jobs there have become part-time and don't involve benefits. So that's a concern. They're certainly a major part of the employment picture in our part of the state and throughout the state. Actually, a lot of the employees at the casinos here come from somewhat distant places in-state.
All right. Well, Brian Hallenbeck, thank you very much for being with us. Real interesting stuff.
Thank you.
That's Brian Hallenbeck, staff writer for The Day of New London. And as we heard, his beat includes the casinos of Connecticut. Real quick, Steve Dupree, and then we'll go to our listeners.
Two things. One, this is a four-way conversation, so I didn't get a report. You were talking about saturation. No state has stopped at one or two casinos. I love it when Scott says, Millennium likes competition. Great, then let's let lots of casinos. On the point about wages, I actually looked this up. The Bureau of Labor Statistics of the federal government, which I think is pretty unbiased, in 2014 found that when you include executive pay, which are the higher paid people, the median hourly wage for casino workers was $11.09. But when you just took the floor people, you know, the people who are doing the dealing, the median wage was $9.48. And as the gentleman just spoke about, they've gone to more and more part-time to avoid the benefits. So the argument that this creates great jobs, we're already at 4.3% unemployment, one of the lower ones in the country. That's a very poor argument to build a casino.
Do you want to jump in there, Scott?
Sure. Details matter. In this proposal, the state would be looking to create a partnership with someone who would be managing and running these casino efforts. Competition's a factor. Go into it with your eyes wide open. Understand that there are money for infrastructure and costs that need to be set aside, a program for problem gamers that needs to be created. We have none in New Hampshire. But going straight to the point, Millennium Gaming has said, look at what we're doing in Western Pennsylvania. It's one thing to claim. It's another to prove that you're already doing it elsewhere. Our CEO, Bill Wortman, has said, our average full-time pay in New Hampshire for the thousands of jobs we'd be creating, somewhere between 2,000 and 4,000 by the time the dust settles on a new casino, is $43,000 a year plus benefits. I think a lot of people in New Hampshire looking for jobs would look at that number and say that's a family-sustaining level of income. As far as competition, I think that's what drives the up and down of the market. If you've got a smart partner, if you've got someone that has a good product, then you are able to insulate yourself a great deal more from the competition in different casinos. That's why you have to choose carefully. That's why you have to go into this debate with eyes wide open. We're not pledging a panacea here, but we're saying we can definitely compete.
Let's take some calls, gentlemen. Okay. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Here's an email that came in from Molly in Bennington. She says, how about turning the Balsams into a high-end gambling resort? Molly says, not the kind of place for busloads of grannies on a junket, but a magnet for the Casino Royale crowd. This would give the gambling lobby a nod and boost the North Country economy while not luring the gambling poor with a new way to lose money. Is this being looked at, Scott Spradling? I know everybody talks about the Southern Tier, but does this bill talk about putting a second casino somewhere else?
It does. And there is no geographic limit to this proposal, Senate Bill 113. It is two casinos. One is a Category 1 license. So a large destination description. The second would be a smaller Category 2, $80 million license fee for the one, $40 million license fee for the second. There are at least a couple of places, actually three now, locations that are being discussed with levels of interest. Salem, where local voters have already passed a referendum with 82% support. So Salem is saying, yes, please do. Loudoun, New Hampshire Motor Speedway, where they have said if this passes, they would pursue a Category 2 license. There is discussion from a gentleman out of Rochester, New Hampshire, where they've talked about the fairgrounds as a site for potentially a Category 2. And there have been more than one conversation about North Country locations like Berlin. Balsams has not been suggested as one of those site locations, but obviously we're watching the debate and development.
Okay. Well, Molly, thanks for the email. And John is calling in from Concord. Hi, John. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm an executive director of a nonprofit organization, and I was wondering if your guests could touch on the question of charitable gaming. I know this is a regional conversation today, but many of the nonprofits, cultural and human service nonprofits, receive a certain amount of money from the existing charitable gaming that would likely go away if those people were going to other states.
Yeah, so, or to casinos here in New Hampshire, John, right?
No, actually, the Senate bill provides for a continuation of the charitable gaming funding to go to those organizations if there is casinos in New Hampshire.
I see. Okay. Either of you want to jump in on the charitable gaming issue,
sure.
Scott?
I'll go first so that Steve can whack me afterwards. all right. So there is John's right. There's a charitable gaming protection, a provision in this thing. To say it quickly and simply so that Steve can have a turn, bottom line is this. Right now in New Hampshire, roughly speaking, there's about $13 million a year that is distributed to various nonprofit groups and charities through charity gambling. And when people say, well, what is that, Scott? It is the casino games that you could do anywhere in the country, but it's under a charity provision. They just redid some regulations on that because lawmakers found that the laws around it was a bit more like the Wild Wild West and very little accountability. That's being improved. The bottom line of this bill says this. If we're talking about $13 million that is distributed for these charitable groups, then when the casinos come in, if there is any impact on that bottom line, say the $13 million goes to $11 million, then the casinos must write a check at the end of the year as part of a make-whole provision to say you will never –
to keep it sustainable.
To keep it sustainable, and that is in perpetuity. You must always keep it at whatever the level is of the last full year before casinos come in. So we're using $13 million because it's about the average of what they're talking about. And the only other thing I'll say is, again, the cost of doing nothing. This provision is part of this bill. There's no such make-good provision should we do nothing and these other casinos, especially in Massachusetts, begin to draw that business out. They will absolutely see a hit, and I think that's what John's referring to.
I see. Okay, so he's worried that if Massachusetts goes ahead and New Hampshire does not, yeah. charitable gamblers here in the Granite State will say, oh, Massachusetts could be fun. Let's go there.
Right.
You're saying if we build it here, we're going to hold yeah. some of that charity money here.
Just as rooms and meals and lottery percentages would drop if we do nothing, so too would the charity gaming activities.
Super quick, Steve, please. Yeah.
Well, I don't think the room and meals revenue will drop in Concord, New Hampshire because there's a casino in Everett, Massachusetts. I think it will drop if there is one in Salem, and that's part of the cannibalization argument. This is my personal view, but if we're going to end up with a casino, I think it would be better just to have them write the check for $13 or $15 million and get rid of the wild, wild rest, the unregulated casinos that are operating for charities. It's a poor way to raise money. So if we are going to at least concentrate it in those. But again, I love the fact that Millennium Gaming wants competition. We should, if we're going to do it, let's let them go everywhere. Let the market decide.
Let's take Ben in Hudson. Hi, Ben. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Two quick points. One is I can appreciate there's a funding problem for the state, but we already get a lot of revenue from things like lotteries in the state. And I don't think that having the poor pay for more basics like education and the road is going to be another good option. We already can't find a sustainable way of getting taxes, and I don't think casinos is going to be a good option. What? The other thing is
– Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, Ben. Go ahead.
No, thank you. The other thing is just that we're going to be, like they're saying, surrounded by casinos in Connecticut and Massachusetts. In New Hampshire, people do come to New Hampshire, but it's not a casino state. People come to New Hampshire to get away from things like casinos. So that's pretty much my point. Thank
the
you.
Brand issue. Yeah, thank you for calling in. Two quick points to you, Scott, on okay. the idea that casinos prey on the poor, that
sure.
we've heard this.
I think you'll see just about every national study out there shows that at least a quarter of the American population gambles. So that cuts across a great deal spectrum of income. This is a choice issue. Nobody is being mandated to go participate and gamble. What I love about the Live Free or Die state is that you can choose to do it or choose not to do it. You're not required. We also have in New England a very high average level of income, and that income level is on the rise here in New England. So I think the money is there. As for brand, I'll keep it very simple. I respect the perspective of coming to New Hampshire to maybe escape the 40 states that have casinos. But with due respect, I think if you think about states like, oh, I don't know, let's say Michigan, Oregon, Montana, Arizona, Iowa. These are not Kansas. These are not places that people think about as casinos. They may not.
I'm not the first
one to hop a flight to Kansas to go see the Hollywood Slots Casino. I'm not going to Topeka anytime soon. But in terms of fairness, we don't have a branding issue here. We're a tourism state. This would be one other option.
Well, and Steve, to you, I'm interested in that branding question. But as the former Republican Party chair, I mean, Scott's saying, hey, free choice, free will. If people want to gamble, they will. If people don't want to gamble, they won't. In the meantime, the state could bring in some revenue. That sounds like a Republican idea.
I'm glad you brought that up. The Republican Party platform still to this day and for the last 40 years has had as one of its core planks that we oppose the idea of casino gambling because even though we're a live free or die state, we don't allow people to do a lot of dumb things and we try to prevent the state from
That's
doing
a dumb
thing.
That's in the party platform.
That is in the party platform. It has been for 40 years, just like every single attorney general. In the last 40 years, when there's been a discussion of gambling, has been opposed to casino gambling. There's nothing good that comes of it. On the branding issue, the state of New Hampshire spends $3 to $4 million a year promoting its brand. Millennium testified 2 years ago that in a $400 million sales casino, they'd spend $30 to $40 million just promoting the casino. New Hampshire's brand, which is a statewide brand, as you come here for the lakes, the mountains, all those family attractions, casino gambling isn't one of them.
But do you see the brand, quote-unquote, of other states being ruined by casinos? I mean, I don't
with all
not
due
go
respect
to Oregon
to Iowa,
because they have a casino.
With all due respect to Iowa and Kansas, I wouldn't be getting on a plane to go there for tourism, although it's a great
place
to drive.
Well, you've got your issues
through.
With Iowa, given
yeah.
your
no, no.
political
Iowa's,
background.
We love Iowa in their role in the presidential primary, but I do think that it has worked for some states where it's very localized, but it's just not part of our DNA. Every other state has an income and sales tax. New Hampshire doesn't. We're not joining the trend there.
Would this bill, Scott, include any money set aside for gambling addiction? We haven't really gotten a chance to talk about that.
It certainly would. 1% of all the slots revenue would be going to fund and create a program. And this bill goes a step further. It establishes not only oversight and regulation, but it creates a new office of oversight to track and study the stats so it can be seen in real time, reported back to lawmakers. Again, an eyes wide open approach to this. And let me say just one quick thing. Former Speaker Bill O'Brien adjusted the GOP plank to say that the opposition to casino gambling, if it was to grow government, not if it was to reduce taxes.
Not exactly so. We had a nice little discussion about that. Our plank and our party and our leadership of our party and our platform says no gambling, and there's no promise. Even though the industry may promise gambling support for addiction, the state doesn't have to follow that. We have a long history of abandoning promises.
All right, both of you. Thank you very much. Please
Thanks,
promise
Laura.
That you come back again
of course,
and talk about
sure.
this.
All we'll carpool.
This is the last time we're going to kill it. It's never coming back.
This is The Exchange on NHPR.